just like a sailor. Could it be a boy's dying sunrise? I'll sing it now. Oh, she can tell me. Well, it's a lot of it, yeah.
Get me a rocking chair. When I get the blues, get me a rocking chair. And if the blues overtake me, gonna rock right away from here. Now when I'm getting lonesome, I jump on the telephone. When I'm getting lonesome, I jump on the telephone. Well, I can call my baby till I'm on my way back home. Well, I'm flippin', floppin', fly. I don't care if I die. I'm flippin', floppin', fly. I don't care if I die. Don't ever leave me, don't ever say goodbye. Give me one more kiss and hold it a long, long time. Well, give me one more kiss. Hold it a long, long time. Well, love me, baby, till I feel it in my head like wine. Here come my baby, flashing a new go-to. Here come my baby, flashing a new go-to. Well, she's so small, she can rumble in the payphone booth. I'll flip, flop, and fly. Don't care if I die. I'll flip, flop, and fly. Don't care if I die. But don't ever leave me. Don't ever see it by.
see a pair of APIs suddenly or sighing sighs. You're thinking nothing's wrong, you string along, boy, what do you get? Those APIs, those sighs, they're part of the .NET set. Your hand and fingers pound the keys, and soon you're building apps with ease. You're acting kinda smart, you're brave of heart, you make that bet. Those keys, that ease, they're part of the .NET set. Some starry night, you're a night owl coding late. Although the schedule's tight, you'll get it done on time, and that just feels great. And all at once it seems so nice, the boss is bragging, you're cool as ice. You hurry to a spot that's just a dot on the net. You're hooked, you're cooked, you're part of the .NET set. Some starry night, when you're a night owl coding late. Although the schedule's tight, you get it done on time, and that just feels great. And all at once it seems so nice, the boss is bragging that you're cool as ice. You hurry to a spot that's just a dot on the net. And then you wonder how it all came about. It's too late now, there's no getting out. You're coding fast and smart. That's the .NET set.
Ladies and gentlemen, our special guest today is an award-winning comedian who you will recognize from his regular appearances on The Tonight Show, David Letterman, and HBO. He is the star of four HBO comedy specials. He was named Best Male Stand-Up Comic by the American Comedy Awards. He is the winner of the Cable Ace Award for Best Stand-Up Comedy Special, and he co-starred in the blockbuster film The Mask with Jim Carrey. Please welcome the artist formerly known as Richard Jenny, Mr. Richard Jenny.
How are you this morning? How about a hand, first of all, for the Microsoft Corporation for putting on this great event. Give him a hand. Woo! And how about a hand for Cirque du Soleil for loaning us this set, ladies and gentlemen. Cirque du Soleil for the set. Told me not to be dirty and I have to enter through a giant condom. Explain that to me. 8 o'clock in the morning, software developers, this pretty much screams comedy. I am personally glad to be with you. I understand that you guys are the most important constituency the Microsoft Corporation has, yeah? And to prove it, they brought you to Orlando in July. Good weather. I'll tell you why I came here. I was back in L.A. I was in a steam room eating jalapeno peppers wrapped in saran wrap with a tube of Bengay jammed up my butt cheeks, and I thought, where can I go and feel like this all day? Orlando, this is the spot. Do you like Florida? How are you liking it so far? Great, isn't it? I like it because it's unpredictable. Like, who would have thought that Elian Gonzalez thing would turn out the way it did? I always thought if I turned on my television and saw a Hispanic boy being forced out of the closet at gunpoint, it would be Ricky Martin. But you don't know. It's all so unpredictable. I flew in from Miami. Anybody come in from Miami? Got a ride back? Great. It's great. They make all the announcements twice on the plane. They go, for your convenience, we have air sick bags. And then a very happy Hispanic person goes, el receptacle es de barfo. Toso un cookieamos en el bago de hibo. I'm paraphrasing, but that's roughly it. It's like even if the plane crashes, oh my God, we're crashing. Por favor, quisieras buenas noches. That's roughly the deal. I want to thank Microsoft for putting me up in a great hotel. How many people are in a nice hotel? Aplauda Fiar. Anybody? Cool. Yes? And that's why I'm kind of happy to be here at 8 o'clock in the morning, even though it's an unusual time. Because it gives me something to do during the day. Usually, if you're a comedian, there's nothing to do during the day. You spend the whole day going, hello, I need a wake-up call. And they go, what time? And you go, it doesn't matter. Whenever you get around to it, I'll be here. You know what I started doing now? I'm watching CNBC all day long. And here's the funny part. I have no stocks. But I sit there all excited. I figured out CNBC is kind of like porno for poor people. You can't have it, but you're all hot for it. You're like, man, look at that. That thing is up 15,000% just today. I had a little incident at the hotel. It's not the hotel's fault. It's just, you know, basically every hotel you go to, you guys travel, you know what I'm talking about. Every hotel is pretty much a place where the English words do not disturb mean wait till I'm naked and barge in with a vacuum cleaner. That's pretty much it. They have a camera. The minute you're nude, in come. Lo siento, I come back. Every hotel, they have two settings on the thermostat. Here are the choices. Arctic Circle or hatching baby chicks. Those are the two. Either sweat through the mattress or wake up and the room is so cold as a penguin in the bed eating your complimentary chocolate. But when you go to a nice hotel like the ones down here, it's the convenience you're paying for. You get hungry, a $13 English muffin is just a phone call away. I call them up, I go, hi, I'd like a muffin, and bang, a guy comes wheeling a conference table in. He's got a big dome on the muffin, a big flourish, the muffin. That will be $13. Like, really? Do you have a straw? What for? Well, for $13, I'm assuming the nooks and crannies are filled with cocaine. How could it be $13? Well, I'm wearing a vest. Well, you should be wearing a condom for what you're doing. It's a muffin. How could it be that much money? I mean, I'm not poor. You guys aren't poor. You're making the big software money. But damn, when you get to the $13 muffin level, I just think they're down in the hotel kitchen getting high, making up food prices, and laughing their butt off. Don't you think they're just down there in the kitchen and there's a guy going, hey, there's a guy on the phone that says he wants a burger. What should I tell him? And the other guy's like, what floor is he on? 6. How old's your grandmother? 72. Tell him it's $78, man. $78, man. He's naked. Get Rosa up there with the vacuum. I don't smoke pot. I want that known. This is a family gathering. There will be no drugs. I used to. I'll admit it. I inhaled. Every single day when I was in college. Till I finally came to the conclusion that... What the hell was that conclusion? Something. Whatever it was, I didn't do it anymore. I can't do it now. Too old now. I worked at UCLA, and one of the students goes, hey, Rich, you want to get high after the show? And I go, I can't. And he goes, why not? And I go, look, when I used to smoke pot, it wasn't really good. And now they know how to grow it better in like one hit, and you're in a coma. And this is when you realize you're getting old, and you're actually saying to a guy at the UCLA campus, you punks, you don't know how good you have it today with your pot. In my day, we had to smoke 5 or 6 just to get high. All night long, rolling and smoking and rolling, staring at a damn Led Zeppelin poster waiting for something to happen. It was bad pot, it was full of twigs and seeds, but we were thankful when we got stoned in those days. Punks today with their one-hit pot and their internet. What is it with the internet, huh? When I was a teenager, I had to use my imagination to fantasize. I didn't have 15 million naked women by pushing a button. Every kid with a laptop is like the Emperor Caligula. Just sit there pressing buttons. Bring me millions of boobs. They amuse me. I tire of them. Bring me a million more. Overstimulated punks. That's why I love the internet. I got my own website now, richardjenny.com. Don't go there. It doesn't matter. But the internet, and I don't want to be corny and I'm not kissing up, it really does bring people together. The internet proves once and for all, no matter how much of a twisted sexual mutant you thought you were, you've got millions of pals. You can just sit there making things up. Find people who make love to goats that are on fire. Ding, specify type of goat. Gay mountain goat. We have found 6 million matches. I thought I was alone. The internet is like the Lenny and Squiggy of debauchery. Remember that TV show where they would go, where are we going to find anybody stupid enough? And just then the guy would come in going, hello. That's how it is. Just when you think it can't get worse. I saw a website called The Best of Bestiality. You know why? Because when I'm looking at bestiality, only the best will do. And I saw a beautiful young blonde woman on there doing a pig. And I'm thinking, what could be grosser than this? Click. Hello. A moose. And my friend goes to me, man, what is she thinking? I go, Tom, the hell with that. What's the moose thinking? What happens to a moose after this? He'll have issues. He'll be writing letters, dear penthouse. I never thought anything like this would happen to me. I'm an average-looking moose from a small Midwestern herd. All right, good. You sound like you're waking up. Are you waking up? Yeah? Yeah, I know it's early, but I have to tell you, I couldn't be more excited to be here if I had any idea what it is you do for a living. But I am willing to learn. I learn something every day. Today I was reading the paper and I learned this. Did you know this? That traditionally, when women's hemlines go down, a Republican wins the White House. Did you know that? And when they go up, a Democrat wins. And when they go over a woman's head, Bill Clinton gets in. Thank you very much. You've been a great crowd. No, I'm kidding. Are you going to miss Clinton? How many folks are going to miss Clinton? Oh, well, what are we going to do now? I'm going to miss Bill. Now it's Bush and Gore. It's hard to get excited. Sort of like when the doctor goes, well, what'll it be? Ointment or suppositories? It's not. I'm going to miss Bill. Say what you will about him. That is the best liar we have ever had in the world. I know a lot of you guys think you can lie, but can you look at the whole world, not even blink? I did not have sex with that woman. We think you did. I didn't. We have proof you did. Oh, all right, I did. You got to love that. That guy's a genius. The thing about Clinton, though, he's kind of an ordinary guy, right? He's just kind of a regular guy, got a little bit of a gut, eats at McDonald's, can't keep his pants buttoned. We know a lot of guys like that. They're not horrible people. They just don't want to be leader of the free world. They're shooting for captain of the bowling team. You want a guy, an extraordinary guy, to be president, a guy who's better than the average guy. That's why my choice for next president, Jack Kevorkian. He won't lie. You might not agree with him, but that guy won't lie to us. Bill Clinton commits adultery, won't tell a single person. Jack Kevorkian committed first-degree murder, taped it, and put it on Sunday night network television. Looking right in the camera, killing a guy. Hey, thanks for tuning in. I'm Jack Kevorkian. I'm killing this guy here. Yeah, I know. Get a pen. That's Kevorkian, and I'm killing this guy here. Yeah, we'll be back in a minute. He won't. That's Kevorkian. And they go, hey, we'll... I'll kill myself while I'm in there. And that... How many guys have the nerve to stand up and go, hey, I don't want to live if it means I can't kill other people? If that guy was president, he wouldn't be all mushy mouth, but I didn't inhale, but I didn't have an orgasm, so technically... Oh, shut up. Not Jack. He'd be right on the White House lawn having sex with an intern and doing bong hits out of the death machine. And that's the kind of leader you want. A guy on the White House lawn looking right in the camera going, that's Kevorkian. Impeach me. That's why I would do anything for a guy like Kevorkian. Except be his roommate, because that's got to be tense, don't you think? When that guy comes home, Rich, you awake? Yes, I am, Jack. And I will be the rest of the night. Feel that. I have never felt better in my life. I feel good this morning. I worked out. Anybody here work out this morning? What are you, nuts? I didn't work out. Who's got time? I'm busy. You know how it is. You're busy people. It's faster. Instead of working out, I've just come to the conclusion it's faster to not walk by a mirror when you're naked. You know what I mean? As long as you got your clothes on, you can kid yourself and go, I'm in damn good shape. Then you see yourself under a full-length mirror and a light and go, whoa, what the hell is this? If I saw this in a forest, I'd shoot it and run back to the car. That's when you wind up at a gym with a guy going, join up and you can look like me. You're going, you took drugs to get that big, didn't you? And the guy denies it. He's like, pick up that pen and join up. You go, why don't you pick it up? I can't move at all. I have no choice but to get larger and eventually explode in a blinding flash of perfect health. That's when you go, look, I don't want to join, and you're walking out. And this is how they get men to join. They always have some woman on the wall, half naked, going, join up for the summer. And you're like, hey, why didn't you say so? Take all my income. And they're never there on beautiful girl day. I'm always there on guys disgustingly naked in a locker room day. Guys who want to talk. Hi, how are you? I'm Bob. I'm naked. Nice to meet you. This is Bob. He's naked. Here's a guy, 90 and naked. There's two words don't go together, naked and 90. How are you? Nauseous, Pop. How are you? Get away. And you go in the steam room where you can't wear clothes, but the least you could do is sit with a little modesty in the steam room, fellas, if you know what I'm talking about. I always sit across from some guy with his knees in different time zones. Have you met this guy? Oh, yeah, it's hot in here, isn't it? I'm like, hey. We secure the hatch there, big fella? Expecting a furniture delivery? Back off. What the hell is that all about? Well, you sound like a tremendously good crowd for 8 o'clock in the morning. I hope you're having a good time in Florida. I went out yesterday and rented one of those wave runners. Have you tried that? It's a little expensive. It's like $40 for a half hour. If you don't want to do it, here's something you can do instead. Get a garden hose, turn it up full, hold it 2 inches from your eyeballs, and spray it directly at your head while simultaneously whacking yourself in the crotch with a tire iron. Just saved you $40. All right, how about a round of applause? Let's get this going. We got a long day. I'm gonna be coming on and off during the day. I'm the host for the show, MC, what have you, and I'm gonna be in and out doing comedy and bringing people on and off. And I know you're thinking, well, why is that? Well, let's just say you can't get Billy Crystal to come down here for a complimentary breakfast and some free software. This is a remarkably energetic crowd for 8 a.m. God bless you for showing up. And now on to the important stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, your first speaker of the day. Give him a round of applause, your kind attention and your energy. Mr. Chris Atkinson. Give him a hand. Chris Atkinson, everybody.
Well, what do I say after that? Except welcome to the PDC, welcome to Orlando. You having fun out there? It really is my great pleasure to welcome you to this, the 8th professional developer conference that Microsoft have hosted. And it's a really great pleasure to see you all here today. Thanks for taking the time out of your schedules to join us. It's a particular great pleasure for me since I've just recently transferred over here from Europe. I used to be responsible for all of the developer activities and relations we had in our European, Middle East, and Africa region. And I have to say that since I arrived over here from Europe a short while ago, I've certainly started to notice some cultural differences. Like the fact that you're all here at this time of the morning, you know, 7:30 in the morning, Frank Sinatra songs, you're all here, a comedian. You just would never see that happening in Europe. I mean, over there, I think any self-respecting conference would start at about 10 o'clock in the morning. So how many people are here from Europe? Let me see a show of hands. I know there's... Whoa, welcome. You guys have got up early this morning, haven't you? I guess the other seats are basically where all the other self-respecting Europeans will be joining us later, because like any other self-respecting European, at this time of the morning, they're in bed. Well, the team have basically been working very hard to pull this conference together for you. And we've got a whole host of fantastic developers coming down, our principal software engineers, our distinguished engineers, to share our vision with you of the future. There's been a lot of hard work going on behind the scenes, and I know that I speak for the entire team when I say that their single objective here is just that you have a great week, that you really enjoy yourself here, that you learn a lot. We're just tremendously enthusiastic about the .NET vision, about the .NET platform, and we really hope that some of that enthusiasm we'll rub off with you this week, and you'll start to really share that with us. Now, in preparing for this PDC, I sort of got out the old notebooks and I sort of dusted them off and went through and looked at, you know, PDC's past. And I found that the first PDC actually took place in 1991. It was the year we took the lid off Windows 3.1. And I just a few months before I joined Microsoft, so I wasn't actually around at that time. But go on, let me have a look. I'll put my dark glasses on so I can see through the lights. Give me some hands. Hands up if you're actually at that first PDC, the Windows PDC in 1991. Whoa, I can see a few hands there. Welcome back. Now, if you remember that one, welcome back. Round of applause for those guys. You'll remember that that was a great PDC as well, although nothing on this scale. It was also a really important defining point for us. It was a defining point for Microsoft, for our developer partners, for our software partners, for our customers, and for the industry. That was the transition from DOS to Windows. Now, I thought about this. I stacked all of the PDCs up in a row, all eight of them. And we had the first PDC in 91 and this PDC here today. This really is a defining point as well. This PDC is every bit as significant for Microsoft, for you as our developer partners, for our customers and for the industry as that PDC was back then in 1991. Now, I'll tell you, things have changed a lot in that time. Development's become a lot more complex. We've moved from an environment of sort of relatively simple apps, maybe departmental apps. Apps now have to span departmental boundaries, organizational boundaries. They have to work across the internet. Taking advantage of HTML and HTTP and XML and protocols like SOAP is just expected. So this is a whole series of new challenges that we're facing. And we've really adjusted the agenda of the PDC to reflect this. It was relatively straightforward a few years ago. You put a PDC on. Essentially, it was a one-product show. Well, a couple of years ago, we did the Windows DNA PDC, and that was a multi-product show. And the feedback from you guys and girls at the time was absolutely clear. It was just, Microsoft, just give us more direction on this stuff. Yeah, the keynote's fine, but then you have like 200 breakout sessions, and we have to go to all these breakout sessions, but we're not really sure which are the really important ones to go to, because you haven't probably done a good enough job of painting the big picture for us. So this year, we've really changed the schedule. Today, we have an entire day. We're going to kind of keep you in and out of this room with some entertainment in between all day. We're going to have an entire day of general sessions when our principal architects will really lay out the vision of the .NET platform, and they will drill down deeply into code for you. We want you all to understand the .NET platform in its entirety, the core architectural structure of it, the key building blocks. And we hope we can really achieve that today. Once that's done, then you can really, really go into those individual breakout sessions during the next few days and really, really drill into those details. And we'll be providing you with the bits later on this week as well, so you can actually test out the code for yourself. Now, while the way that we build applications has changed a lot during the last few years, one commodity certainly hasn't really increased in its number. And that's a very, very precious commodity. It's a scarce resource throughout the world. Companies are scrabbling to get hold of it. And in fact, as we move into the whole sort of e-commerce world, where every business wants to be doing business-to-business commerce, there's just not enough of this at all. It's the developer hour. Now, Microsoft's success has really been built, I guess, with the developer community in the past, with just making that hour really productive for you. Now, there's a long way we can go in that, but fundamentally, that's what the PDC is all about, the productivity of every single developer hour that you spend. Now, we really want your feedback. My team wants to really understand your feedback on this PDC, so I really would encourage you, when you attend all those sessions, take those evaluation forms, you've got them in front of you now. As you're filling out the evaluation form, think about your developer hours. Think about that individual hour. Think, has what I've just learned in this session, has what I've just heard really going to help me? Is it going to make every hour that I'm developing code in the future more productive, more enjoyable, more productive experience? And it's absolutely essential that in doing this, we enable you to take all the skills that you've got today and take them forward in a multi-language environment to be super productive. So that's absolutely the core of the PDC. So without further ado, I'm actually becoming guilty of doing what I promised myself I wouldn't do, which is wasting developer hours. I guess there's about 6,000 of you here in the audience, so I've spoken for about 5 minutes. So, gee, I've just burnt 500 developer hours in 5 minutes. So I've just pushed a bunch more companies who need those developer hours to the back of the queue. But I certainly hope that for every developer hour that you have here, will be paid back to you multiple times with what you'll learn and be able to deploy and implement in the future. So without further ado, I'll just say once again, welcome to the PDC. I've got one note that I was handed just as I came on stage, which I really wanted to read out. And it's just a reminder to say that there'll be some hands-on labs open on Wednesdays. It'd be great if you folks could register for those hands-on labs. It'll be done on a first-come, first-served basis. Registration is by the kiosks near registration. And basically, you'll have self-paced exercises in some great new technologies, including Visual Basic.net, C#, Active Server Pages Plus, ATL and Visual C++.net. So please register for those hands-on labs after this session down at the registration booth. So without further ado, let me just introduce a man who certainly knows a developer hour when he sees one. He's spent many millions of them over the years. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in giving a round of applause to Mr. Paul Moritz. Thank you.
Good morning. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be with you here today. It's our task at this conference basically to introduce you to a new generation of technologies from Microsoft. There may be some of you in the audience who were with us back almost 8 years ago to the day when we introduced the Win32 generation of technology back at a developers conference in San Francisco. And over the years, we built on that base, extending it with Internet technologies, Internet Explorer technologies, server technologies, our WinDNA technologies with its COM and COM Plus components and its ASP server model. And we're here at this conference really to introduce you to the .NET generation of technologies. This is a really exciting and interesting set of technologies that many people at Microsoft have been working on for a number of years now, actually. And the first thing that we had to do in the last couple of months is give this set of technologies a name. Some of you may recall that we use the letters NGWS, and in fact, I think there's some materials still in your handouts that refer to it as such. But we had to give this new generation a name, and as it's quite difficult to do these days, because I'm sure those of you who try to pick out a name, the marketing people tell you that it's important to own the URL as well. And you know that most URL names with five letters or fewer have been already taken out and reserved by somebody who's just hoping to get your phone call. In fact, I myself, as we went through all these names, went and registered a few URLs myself, just so to have the pleasure of answering the phone when our marketing department would call asking me to buy the URL. I was willing to be reasonable. However, we finally alighted on the name .NET because it represents that this set of technologies is designed to contribute to making the Internet into a real, true, distributed computing platform, which is what we need to do if we really need to realize the full benefit of the computing resources and connectivity resources that technology has given us. So we've put this set of technologies together based upon open standards to really allow us in the development community to build the kind of experiences that we think businesses and individuals are going to expect in the years to come. Core to this is this notion of evolving to a true computing platform. And what do we mean by that? You can think of the Internet as having gone through several stages. Started off with the basic email and web usage of the Internet, which was a miracle in terms of the connectivity it provided, the simple link and click paradigm, and it opened up the wonders of connectivity to millions of people. Very rapidly, on top of that, people realized that the notion of just being able to present static pages wasn't enough, that you really needed to be able to tailor and personalize content and start to take transactions across that network. So we saw the start of computing architectures, principally server-based, where we would actually synthesize the page on the fly, pulling information out of databases, pouring that into HTML and projecting that out over the internet. And that was a core reason, one of the core reasons why we came up with our Windows DNA architecture to make it easier to develop those kind of personalized internet applications. What we're looking at now, though, on the internet is going beyond the simple notion of a single website pushing essentially a page of information down to a user. It's sort of the modern equivalent of the old mainframe computing paradigm of a large machine pushing out some information to a terminal. We need to go beyond browsing and start to really allow people to federate resources together across multiple websites so we don't have these websites being islands. A lot of the scenarios that you need to address involve pulling information from multiple websites, from multiple organizations, and splicing those that information together and presenting a superior experience down to the user. Another aspect of that is starting to really fully utilize computing resources, whether they be located at the client or at the server. And we call this generation of computing, this distributed computing done across internet infrastructure, a web services architecture. And our Microsoft.net platform is designed to make it easier to develop those kinds of applications. So the notion is that we're extending beyond the simple notion of taking information located on a single website, projecting that using HTML down to essentially a dumb client. One of the first things we need to do is to allow you to federate together back-end services, allow multiple web services to start to cooperate with each other. A lot of the traffic over the internet in the future is not going to, in fact, be HTML traffic, but will, in fact, be XML-encoded traffic between web servers and websites themselves. I had a great example of this yesterday. I don't know how many of you had problems getting in to Orlando yesterday. The air traffic system over most of the middle of the United States was a mess. I missed my connection in Washington, D.C., got moved by United onto a Delta flight, finally got here late last night without my bag. This morning I called up Delta and to try and find out where it was, and they said, well, you know, we've got it on our computer system, it's still being at United, we can't give you any information, you need to go call United to find out what's going on. What I'd really want is to those have their computer systems cooperate across the internet. I'd have liked the Delta system to be able to query the United system to find out the status of my bag and tell me what was going on. Not sure it would have made any difference, but it would have made me feel better at least. Beyond that is the notion of certain web services existing to serve other websites. So we believe just as an operating system provides certain basic computing resources to an application, there will be in the future certain websites that exist in order to provide computing resources to other websites. We call these building block services, and they will extend the computing paradigm from being a client-server computing paradigm to being a client-server-service computing paradigm. So in the future, when you put forward a platform, you'll not only have to have client resources, server resources available to the application developer, but also resources that live out on the internet and can be served up via XML encoding to make it easy to develop your website. Good examples of this would be identity. Users don't want to have 15 different passwords or even more, one for every website that they have to access. They'd like their identity to be maintained by a service on the internet, programmatically accessible by other sites. Many other services fall into this category as well. You can think of basically a calendar as being a critical service that needs to be available programmatically across the internet. I'm sure many of you, like me, order goods over the internet today. You buy something from an online merchant, they send it to you via UPS, UPS delivers it to your home when you're not there. After three attempts, UPS sends it back to the original merchant. You're annoyed, the merchant's losing money, etc. What you'd really like to have happen is have UPS be able to programmatically query your calendar to figure out when is an appropriate time to deliver that those goods, and so schedule their deliveries. Their web service cooperating with a web service providing information as a building block service on the internet. And there are other examples of this, schematized storage, that you can basically have the modern equivalent of a digital lockbox. Basically, today, sensitive records dealing with privacy. In the paper world, we'll deal with that by having a private box, a safety deposit box at a bank. We go put our personal records in there. The bank physically maintains it for us, but we own the key to it. And when we want to get those records out, we go and open it up with our key. We need to do the electronic equivalent of that for sensitive information. You'd like your medical records to be maintained in a digital safety box for you on the internet where you own the key. And before anyone can access those records, you have to give your permission for them to get in and take the appropriate information and only the appropriate information out of that box. So what we're talking about is the internet evolving from a fairly simple single website to a client model out to this world of web services. We see it going beyond that, though, to really starting to use XML not just as the basic mechanism for transferring data around the internet between websites, but also down to the client. When you send XML-encoded data down to the client, as opposed to a hard-coded presentation format, the client can do intelligent things with that data. So if it's a simple client, it'll simply render it. If it's a more intelligent client and it has the annotated data being sent down to it, then it can start to do more sophisticated things with the information, like provide editing services on that information. And increasingly, we will start to see traffic between clients. I think we're seeing the internet undergoing a transition essentially from a server to client-based computing model to a true distributed computing model, where you see services like Nutella and Napster starting to use the computing resources that are out there on the internet. Someone told me the other day, I'm not sure if the exact statistic is correct, but Intel shipped 2 trillion MIPS last year. All of that computing resource is out there available for developers to use if we can put the infrastructure in place to allow it to be tapped in an orderly and easy manner. So behind all of this is a key idea that we are building this new generation of software, our .NET generation, on a key new internet standard, XML. It's a widely adopted open format. It is being standardized and extended through the W3C process. Microsoft has been a key player in this. We were one of the early participants in the XML movement. You'll find names of Microsoft employees as authors on many of the XML specifications. And we're continuing to work with the industry to keep this a general open data format. We're extending it to also be useful as a way of actually stitching together computing resources. And a good example of this was the recent submission of the SOAP standard to the W3C, where Microsoft and IBM were joint authors on that standard. And a lot of what we're doing today builds upon XML and SOAP and additional protocols that will turn this XML basis into being the key ingredient in this distributed computing architecture that we're building out. So given this world of the internet evolving purely from a presentation-oriented standard in HTML towards a data-oriented standard that can be used as the basis for distributed computing, how do we layer our .NET software on top of those basic ideas? Well, there are several key ingredients in our .NET platform, and we're going to focus on a couple of them at this conference. But over the full course of time, we will lay out 4 categories of important software. Starting, as usual, with most new generations of software, one needs to focus on the tools and the programming framework. So at this conference, we are formally announcing a new version of our programming tools, a new version of Visual Studio, which we call visualstudio.net, and we will go into that in great detail at this conference, and you will take away a copy of the software with you. As an integral part of that is the .NET framework, which is a set of classes, libraries, that make it easier to develop these types of applications and provide you with a basic set of building blocks to get started with. And these tools and frameworks are designed to work very closely with each other. Secondly, we'll be migrating forward our enterprise servers to natively support XML. You will see this already evident in the Windows 2000 generation of our servers. Windows 2000 has a basic XML parser built into it, SQL Server 2000, which you're also getting a copy of, has support for basically accepting XML as an input format and producing it as an output format, and you'll see this theme extend through all of our servers. We will also, over the next 18 months, introduce a set of building block services. The first example of this is Microsoft Passport, which provides a free identity service for use by other websites. And as I will outline later on, we'll extend these set of building block services, make them XML-enabled, XML-accessible, and provide them to you as basic services that you can use from within the VisualStudio.NET framework. So we want those to show up, basically, as an additional set of components on your palette that you can drag and drop into your applications. And finally, we will be moving to a new generation of our device software. I'll give you some outline of this today, but this will be a whole new generation of client-side software coming from Microsoft as well, both for the Windows PC platform as well as for non-PC devices. So to give you a little more information then, if you look at the .NET platform from a structural point of view, it migrates forward from our existing Windows and Windows DNA platform with its COM Plus object model. On top of that, we build a new .NET framework of libraries that has interoperability and encapsulates the COM Plus object model. The new tools on top of that, the new enterprise servers, and the new building block services. What we hope to do with this technology is basically, from a developer perspective, in the first steps of .NET, is enable you to do four things. First, we've thought hard and long about how to make it fundamentally more productive to develop web-based applications. Those of you who've written ASP applications or other applications using other internet development tools today know that it's still quite cumbersome. If you look at an ASP script, it's filled with various types of JScript and VBScript and HTML. The debugging environment's not that great. It's a fairly brittle environment. And we as an industry need to do a whole lot better at developing tools for this new generation of web applications. We need to do for web application development what the industry did for GUI development. Those of you who remember back to the late 80s and early 90s, to write a windowing application, whether it be with Microsoft Windows or X Windows or any other system, there was a tremendous amount of housekeeping that you had to take care of first before you could even write the first line of really productive application code. You had to worry about Z order and hit detection and repainting, etc. And then the industry evolved tools like Visual Basic that made it fairly simple to write a graphical application. We as the industry need to deliver that equivalent of the simple drag-and-drop development tools for web application development. And we hope that you will see in VisualStudio.NET the first of that new generation of highly productive web application development tools. But we need to go beyond that. We need to make it not only easy to develop a web application, but we need to go and allow you to participate in this third generation of the internet. Make it as easy to now expose your application, not simply by projecting an HTML page, but also by exposing it as an XML-enabled web service. And then you have those building blocks. We need to allow a broader community of people, not just the developers, but the system analysts and more sophisticated end users, to use graphical tools to now orchestrate those multiple web services together to really automate business processes. And we'll be introducing today a new technology, which we call Slang, to help with that. And finally, we need to make sure that the internal computing architecture federates well with this new distributed computing model that's going to appear on the internet. So these four things are what we're hoping to deliver with our VisualStudio.NET generation, the .NET frameworks, and our .NET enterprise servers. So I'd like to touch briefly on the .NET framework. That is this set of technologies that lives within the .NET platform and really provides the basic building blocks for developing these web applications and web services. We are providing you with the V1 of that technology today. As I said, it represents a tremendous amount of work. Literally hundreds of man years of work have gone into this technology, which you're being provided with today. It is based upon a brand new common language runtime. By that I mean the basic services that enable a program to execute, we have unified between our various Microsoft languages. This has been a long time goal of ours to get Visual Basic, Visual C++, and our other languages onto a common footing. So whatever we do for a C++ developer, we can do for a Visual Basic developer, we can do for a developer using any other language, and also have contributions from third parties included in this environment. So we have today the first, what we believe, the first true general-purpose, multi-language, modern, object-oriented runtime environment. And as the course of this conference, we'll be showing you how we've opened this up to third parties and invited them to re-host their languages on top of this technology. And this really is a state-of-the-art technology offering the very highest levels of performance, very sophisticated JIT and annotation technologies. And for those of you who are interested in that sort of thing, there'll be a lot of riches for you to discover here. Then on top of that, we have a set of secure integrated class libraries based upon the notion that these building blocks need to work very well in the local environment, but also work well across the internet using XML as the data transport. So these services, these .NET libraries, are designed to encapsulate basically the lowest level services, whether they be coming from a Windows operating system or other complex services, or in the case of small devices, even from other operating systems. It is our intent to take the core intellectual property in this common language runtime and these class libraries and offer them to standards bodies so they can become a truly open set of standards. And then building upon these two core technologies, we have a new full programming model for developing web applications, web services. It basically is upward compatible with the ASP model, although it really revolutionizes that model and provides a very high degree of productivity for building secure, scalable web services and web applications. So to use that framework, we need a tool set. So in conjunction with that, we have VisualStudio.net, which is the next version of Visual Studio. And it builds upon those core .NET framework technologies. And it really delivers what I was referring to earlier as drag-and-drop development for web services and web applications. It is a multi-language environment. We are opening up the development environment to other language vendors so they can integrate their languages into this environment and get full advantage of all of the runtime tools as well as the design time tools. So this fulfills another goal of ours at Microsoft, which is to get Visual Basic and C++ to share the same basic development environment and open that up to third parties so that they can host their languages in that environment and get full advantage of the basic work that we've done in terms of the runtime and the design time and debugging support. And we want to do this in a way that's as far as possible upward compatible with the learning that literally millions of developers have in the Visual Basic environment and the C++ environment. Our surveys report that of the people who list themselves as earning a living by writing code, fully 50% of those people use some variant of Visual Basic as their programming language. So being able to take those people forward in a straightforward way into the web services world is what we hope to accomplish with VisualStudio.net. Now, the best way to actually understand what we've done here is for me to invite Dave Mendlin, who's a senior product manager at Microsoft, to come up and give us a demonstration of VisualStudio.net. Dave?
Thanks, Paul. With VisualStudio.net, developers will have all the tools they need to build the next generation of applications on the internet. We're going to be building a demonstration of an application getting online and going to a doctor's office, a virtual doctor's office, looking to see what doctor's appointments are open, and then scheduling one of these appointments. We're going to build that website with visualstudio.net. Then we're going to take that functionality and we're going to expose it out as a web service so that other healthcare companies might use that doctor's office scheduling function as part of their application. So let's take a look at visualstudio.net. Now today, if you were to build that kind of application, you would probably be looking at some code that looks a lot like this. It's got HTML, and there's some commingled with some client-side script and some server-side script. It's very difficult to build applications today with this metaphor. And that's because developers generally work in teams. You have some developers that are building the user interface. And generally, we have graphic artists and designers that are working on constructing the UI. And then you have the developers that are writing the code. And they're all working against the same page. It's very difficult to work that way. Now, with ASP Plus and web forms that are now fully supported in Visual Studio, developers can work in a more visual way. And we've cleanly separated out the user interface from the code so that you can have your graphic artist generate the best user interface at the same time you're working independently on your code. So let's show you the design experience for a web form. For you Visual Basic developers, you're already familiar with building a Windows client user interface by dragging and dropping from a toolbox. And that's what I'll do here. I'll simply drag and drop elements like a calendar control and a button onto my web form. Now, of course, assembling user interface is a key aspect of building your application, but generally developers spend a lot of time working on the middle tier business logic. So let's take a look at that. One of the biggest challenges that developers generally have is that they have to work in teams of lots of different developers using lots of different languages, Visual Basic and C++ and now C#. So I'm going to start working on a business rule. And what I need to do here is I want to leverage the code that somebody has already written. And if you see in the Solution Explorer in Visual Studio, we've actually got a component that was written in C#. And you'll be hearing a lot about C#. It's our most productive language in the C and C++ family. It's our first component-oriented language with first-class support for properties, events, and methods. And you'll hear a great deal about C# here today. But what we have here is a component built in C#, and it's an appointment component. Now, I, as a VB developer, want to have access to that component. And now, with the common language runtime across all of our tools, I can simply type in inherits, and the name of my component is called doctor schedule, and call into that appointment directly. I'm reusing code written in another language. This is implementation inheritance. This is not interface inheritance. I'm actually directly using the functionality of that C# component. And now I'll extend that even further, and you can see some of the things that we've done to the VB language, including overriding. So now any developer programming in any language, whether they be in C# or Visual Basic or any of the other languages on the .NET framework, they'll have access to build components and reuse those across languages. Now, we've built this middle tier business object and we need to wire that together to our user interface that we were just looking at. So I will go back to our web form, and just to get right into the event handler, just as in Visual Basic, you simply double click and it takes you to the event handler for the click event. And now I will create a new instance of that business object that I just built. And you can see that we have IntelliSense that's essentially helping me write my code, giving me all the things that I can do against all the various objects that I have. So in this case, I'm instancing a new instance of our business object that we just built, and it's offering me up all the exposed methods. And these are the exposed methods that are available in the C# component as well as anything that I've extended in VB. And here's that get open appointments function that I just extended. Now I've got a snippet of code that adds just a little more to this click event. And now let's run the application and test out our online doctor's office. So here's the site that we just built, and now I'm going to pick the day that I want to go check out the doctor's appointments that are available. And I'll say I want to go see a doctor tomorrow, and we'll click on the button. And now it's called into that business rule, into the C# component, through the also through the Visual Basic components that I needed. And you can see that we now get the user interface that we needed, all the information. We have our doctor's appointment available to us. It's that easy to build user interfaces with visualstudio.net. Now we've built the user interface. Let's take that business logic that we just built and expose it out as a web service. Here's that same function, and what I'll do is I'll simply tag it as a web method. Now, by doing this, I've essentially established the infrastructure that's required to handle SOAP. SOAP is Simple Object Access Protocol. It's a standard that was co-authored by IBM, Microsoft, and others, and was submitted to the W3C. And what this enables is for developers to build components on any platform and expose them out so that you can call them via XML. So I'm going to go ahead and compile this function. And all I've done is simply tag it as web method. And now this function is exposed as a web service. So what just happened? Well, this thing just created this XML file that describes the location of my web service, as you can see here. This is the SOAP I was talking about. The name of the function and any parameters that are required, in this case, the day. So as you can see, you didn't have to write that. That was generated on your behalf. We've built this web service. Now let's switch hats and think about a healthcare company that might want to take advantage of this exposed web service. A physician referral service that you might call up to find the best doctors in a location might have a great use for this. So here I have an example of that. Healthcare One is a physician referral service, and you can go up to this website and find the best orthopedic specialists in a particular zip code. And it'll actually bring back the list of doctor offices that are in my area, including the Beacon Hill Clinic, the website that we just built. And so it has a little information about the Beacon Hill Clinic, but this clinic referral service wants to have more information. Wouldn't it be great if you could go and directly book that doctor's appointment from this website? So how would you do that? Well, you simply add a web service, and visualstudio.net makes that incredibly easy to do. Let's go back to Visual Studio and take a look at the physician referral service. And here we're looking at that same page. This is the physician referral site. And what we're going to do here is we're going to extend it. We're going to add some code behind this open appointments button. I've built that web service, and now to find web services that are available to me, I can go over to the Server Explorer. Now, the Server Explorer is the centralized resource for developers. It's the place you'll find all of your server-based resources. And one of the most interesting is web discovery. That's where our web services are located. And here is that business object that we just built. It's now exposed to me, and I can call into it directly just by picking it and adding it to my project. Now, what's happening when I say add to referral is it's actually going out to that public internet site. It's downloading that XML file, and now Visual Studio has parsed the XML file and can now treat it as a first-class object because it knows the properties, methods, and events, and it knows about the data types that are available on that web service. So now I can write some code directly against that web service. And you can see let's get my toolbox back out here.
should be okay. That should be okay. So now, I should be able to run my site, click into that web service, and it will return back to me the open appointment. So let's try that again. Small little hack. There we go. So now you can see I'm connected to my web service. And I can program against it in a rich way. Now, regardless of whether or not I'm programming against a Windows component that was built in Visual Studio, or a component that's running on another platform programmed in another language, I still get this rich statement completion. And in this case, it exposed all the web service functionality that's available to me here. And again, I've got another snippet of code that I can steal from the toolbox. It calls that same web service. Let's compile the application, go back to our website, and now we're calling into the web service over the internet. It's returning back to us the list of open doctor's appointments based on that web service, as you can see here. Thank you. Got a little dicey there for a second. So we've built an application, and one of the most important things about, you know, the internet is that you can, of course, build browser-based applications that run on your desktop. Well, what if I wanted to build an application that worked on mobile devices, cell phones and pocket PCs and other mobile devices? Well, we've got that as well in visualstudio.net. What we have here is you're looking at a mobile form. Now, this user interface looks a little different from the one you just saw. This actually is using adaptive user interface components that take full advantage of the pocket devices that you might be using, your mobile devices that you might be using. So it looks a little differently, but it's actually using the same server-side logic. It's still calling into the same web services. Let's take a look at this application running on a cell phone. Perfect. Just to give you a, here's our cell phone. And what we're going to do is we're going to jump right into the clinic referral website. And this is really going out over the internet and bringing up this exact same application. And I'll type in the zip code and click enter. And these are the clinics that you just saw. And I'll select Beacon Hill. And we'll go into Emily Walu. And there are open appointments. You can build applications that run on any device. So what we've just shown you is an application that is fictional, right? It's a fictional doctor's office and it's a fictional web service. Let's talk about something that's real. Let's talk about Microsoft.com. Now, one of the most heavily trafficked sites is, of course, Microsoft.com, and specifically the search site. Now, the team that built the search site took that functionality and have ported it to the next version of ASP, ASP Plus, and they built it with C Sharp. It's now, a beta version is now in production. And all the functionality that you have in search.microsoft.com is now moved over. And what's interesting here is they were able to build that same application in a third of the time that it took to build the application that they initially built. It's twice as fast, and it's 3 times more scalable. There are great benefits to moving to the next version, to .NET. Now, not only did they port this technology, this application, right over to ASP Plus, they did something really interesting. They exposed out that functionality, their search functionality, as a web service. And so now you can add this web service into your applications. You can search directly from your websites into msdn.microsoft.com. And I'll type in VS as a query. And when I click on this button, it'll actually make a live web service call over the internet and return back to us the XML that you can now add directly into your applications. So as you can see, with web forms, the ability to build applications that will run on any browser, on any platform, and any device, a clean separation of user interface and code, with web services, the ability to build middle-tier logic that's exposed out to any developer on any platform, and with the common language runtime and cross-language inheritance, developers have all the tools they need to build the applications that will power the next generation of the internet. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate that. Now, as we've been developing this technology, we've been working closely with outside companies. In fact, there are more than 100 companies who have been receiving early releases of the software from us and giving us feedback, and we've been incorporating that feedback into the product as we develop it, and we greatly appreciate their help. There are some companies who've really come to grips with this technology and have very serious intentions to use it, and one of those companies is Great Plains, and what I'd like to do now is to invite up Steve Annenson, who's the chief architect at Great Plains. Great Plains is the leading supplier of business management solutions to medium-sized companies in the United States. And Steve's going to describe to you the work they've been doing with Visual Studio and C-sharp and other technologies. Steve?
Thanks, Paul. Excellent.
Go ahead.
Over 120,000 companies worldwide use Great Plains to automate essential business functions. So these could be back office functions such as accounting, purchasing, order management, front office functions such as lead management, customer relationship management, manufacturing, human resources, and a variety of other functions. For about the last 10 years, we've actually used our own technology, our own development platform, to write these applications. It gave us unprecedented flexibility and helped us succeed in a lot of ways in the market. To bring us to where we are today, which is a leader in the mid-market for business management software. After about over a year of collaboration with Microsoft on the Microsoft.NET framework and looking deeply into it, we are today making a strategic announcement that we're, for our next generation application, going to use a Microsoft.NET framework and the C-sharp language to develop our next generation applications. So let me explain the reasons for that decision. Architecturally, we had 4 different objectives that we had to meet. First of all, and easily the most important, is that we needed to move to interconnected business. Others this morning have talked about the paradigms that are being used in the web today. Interconnected business is what we believe is really going to cause the web to explode, and a business management application, of course, has to support it. In the next 5 years, all business, we believe, will be e-business. In other words, there'll be an internet-enabled electronic component to business transactions for all companies. So if you're going to have this sort of interconnected business, we needed the capabilities to build server-side applications. And .NET Framework provides excellent server-side capabilities. So we're going to take a lot of our functionality and move it from the client to the server. And so in our investigations, we found that there's excellent scalability characteristics. We talked about the common language runtime. Well, that runtime is more than just common language. It has a huge number of features that make scalability work, as Dave mentioned a few minutes ago. Thirdly, we've got 10 million lines of code, and we need to interoperate well with those, and we need to have a great evolutionary path. And the .NET framework has great interoperability with all of today's technologies and everything that we are using today on the Microsoft platform. And finally, if we have that much code and we're going to be moving code, we need to have an easy way to author new components. So our development environment today is such that somebody can get in, be pretty productive pretty quickly. It's actually a bit easier than many tools that you can find today for doing this sort of development. And we need to have a similar sort of experience for people. But the other thing is we need to be able to customize, and I need to explain a little bit about our business to help you understand just how important that is. E-Enterprise is our flagship product. 80% of the installations of E-Enterprise today also include an additional product written by a third-party ISV. The reason for that is that businesses today are all different. They all have different capabilities and special different needs that they have. So what they do is they customize their solution with a lot of these small products, and those products use Great Plains E-Enterprise as a platform. So what we need to do is customize at that level. But then when they install, the person that's doing the installation, the VAR, value-added reseller, will also typically do customizations. And then when this product is in-house, oftentimes these customers have an IT department which will do additional customizations. So take that all together, and what we have is a platform that gets built up and deployed into the company's site. And that makes it very important for us to have great customization capabilities. And in fact, and I'm going to show this in a demo in a minute, there are some really powerful ways to do customization using the .NET framework. But taken together, the .NET framework represents a great core for the development platform that we need to have for our next generation. So let me show you a sample application. So this particular application is, to give you some background, this is running against production Great Plains product. Everything that you see here is actually live. Super, now you can see it. So there's a small percentage of an enterprise that's going to use our rich Win32 application. But there's a lot of other people who need a trimmed down, specialized, personalized view on the application. And that's what this web page represents. The frame that's around the page is actually the Great Plains e-business desk. This will be shipping sometime before the end of this calendar year, and it will be extended using the .NET framework shortly thereafter. So what this does is allows a company to take and aggregate together a variety of different pieces of functionality into one frame, making it a customized experience for somebody. So what I have is a customized form that was created by the IT department for the World Online 2.com. And what they've done is that they've created a solution. So the solution that came out of the box that they built just included an item number and an item description. And what we have here is actually a list of items that are out of stock. And using this, they can decide what they need to purchase. So let's take a look at the code that it took to write this page. It's very simple. At the top, we have an import of Great Plains functionality. This exposes some types. And so what this amounts to is that Great Plains has a bunch of types that they've exposed, and those types are easily brought in. So most of this page could have been created using the Visual Studio .NET designers, as Dave showed earlier. But the only pieces of code that had to be written by the IT individual is this page load. So they created a new favorite data set. The favorite data set is our type, and then they bound that to a data grid. And that's all the code they wrote. And then what happened is this executes and produces the page that you see. Now you'll see that this particular page is written using C#. It could have also been written using Visual Basic or even a combination thereof. Okay, coming back to this frame, it's been actually, this particular grid has been extended in two ways. First of all, we have a quantity available this week. Now, the this week doesn't show, but that's what this column is about. This particular piece of functionality was added by writing a component which extends eEnterprise on the server, and then that automatically got reflected back onto this web page live. The second piece is a case where the world online said, hey, it's great that I know when things are going to go out of stock, but what I really need to know is how long it takes a vendor to get me the item that went out of stock so that I make sure that I don't run out of inventory. And to do that, they need to have the lead time from the vendor, and that can change. So they need a dynamic way to actually get the lead time from the vendor. And so the IT staff person wrote this particular web page using a web service. And so I have some code that shows this. So imagine this, the vendor that supplies items to the world online has implemented on their server a web service, and that web service will provide the lead time for any item. So what you see here is a simple class, lead time, which derives from web service. Web service provides most of the functionality. And then there's one method that's been exposed publicly to the internet. And that's what this declaration web method does. Then this gets compiled down and it's now available to be called. So let's take it from the world online side and look at that code. We have a web page. The only difference on this web page from the previous one is that we added an import of the lead time information. And then we have an extra support file that we're calling. Now this shows how you could actually take and break apart the development of the web page from the development of the code. And this could have been written in Visual Basic as well. So let's look at the invocation of this web service. It's quite simple. We create a new lead time class and then call the method on it, and that will return to us the value of the lead time for that particular item. And that's all it takes. So coming back, an IT developer has the capability to customize their solution very easily using this technology. What we can do is use capabilities like this at the end of the cycle, plus all the additional capabilities of the framework to help us build a great platform for the next generation. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Now, moving on from the .NET framework and the Visual Studio toolset, we're also introducing a new set of .NET Enterprise Service. These will be described in breakout sessions we have here in the conference. Basically, we worked very hard on improving the scalability and reliability of our service. That's manifest in Windows 2000, SQL 2000, where we're getting truly remarkable levels of performance by working on scalability not only within a cluster, but by using several systems clustered together. I mentioned earlier the theme of XML support. We're infusing support for XML into all of our basic server building blocks. It's also our intent, as you'll see, to have those servers work in conjunction with building block services on the internet, a concept that we call federation. Then we'll also be describing at this, conference a new technology, the Slang technology, which is the core language in our BizTalk server tool that basically allows you to work at a higher level, stitching processes and web services together. So I urge those of you also who are interested to go to the sessions on BizTalk and Slang. Slang is an XML-based business process automation or workflow language that we are putting forward as another member of our .NET platform. We'll also be introducing over the next coming months and years a complete set of building block services. These are the new components that instead of living locally in a client or in a server, live out at a website, and our goal is to allow you to drag and drop these components from the palette of your tool into your application. and we will be introducing services for identity, notification and messaging, storing people's preferences and rules, personalization, schematized storage so you can store information and meaningfully share it with other web services, calendar, directory, search, etc. So these will be a complete set of .NET building block services that we will roll out. We intend to federate our .NET Enterprise services with these building block services. An example there would be identity, where if you want to expose services inside your corporate computing environment across the internet to other business partners, you'd need to be able to recognize their credentials and map them to the right set of permissions inside your environment. So this is an example where we'll federate the passport services, which exist to provide general purpose internet scale identity, with Active Directory, which comes with Windows 2000. So when somebody has a passport identity, presents himself at your firewall for access to your corporate resources, that passport identity can be mapped to an Active Directory identity, and then you can give that person the appropriate set of permissions without having to track whether his passport identity is valid or not. That's handled for you by the passport service. So this is an example of the notion of federating enterprise services with the broader internet distributed computing infrastructure. So we're going to be working on .NET as a long-term set of technologies at Microsoft. It is the next generation of what we're doing. We're today unveiling key steps in terms of the framework and the development tools and certain .NET enterprise services. We will be working on that, delivering those to you over the next 12 months. You'll be taking away a pre-release of the Visual Studio and .NET framework today, and we will roll out additional technologies over the coming months and years. What I'd like to do now is to give you another demonstration of another customer who's been working with us and using the .NET framework and the Visual Studio.NET tools. So I'd like to invite Kafar Lawal, who's vice president with Merrill Lynch, to come up and show us the work that they've been doing. Kafar, go ahead.